Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
Well, welcome to Full Power Living, where we're dedicated to awakening the world to the power and importance of human emotion. Today, we're looking at our relationship to food with my guest, Lisa Lutan. With new research from the University of Florida telling us that stressful lifestyles result in the desire to eat, Lisa is offering a common sense and comforting approach to giving food and eating its rightful place in our lives as we talk about being busy, stressed, and food obsessed. So please post your comments and questions on our blogs, which are on emotionalpro.com and on blogtalkradio.com/FPL for Full Power Living. You can also talk with me or Lisa Lutan over our toll-free number, which is 888-498-0570. That's 888-498-0570. And remember, you can also sign up for Full Power Living's broadcast through subscription on iTunes. Well, Lisa Lutan is a healthy living strategist. She's also founder of Healthy, Happy, and Hip, which provides one-on-one coaching, workshops, retreats, and support groups for her clients. Her new book is Busy, Stressed, and Food Obsessed, and it provides tools to help highly successful superwomen slow down, chill out, develop a better relationship with food, and feel great. Her articles have been featured in numerous publications, including The Huffington Post, Better After 50, and Mind Body Green. You can learn more at healthyhappyandhip.com. That's all spelled out. healthyhappyandhip.com. Lisa Lutan, welcome to Full Power Living.
Pleasure to be here.
So stress really has become an important issue in today's world. In fact, as we mentioned in the introduction, stressful lifestyles now have been shown to result in a desire to eat. And it's not just a desire to eat, which I want you to talk to us about some, it's often an obsession around eating. And I want you to talk a little bit about how stress and eating obsessions relate to one another.
Well, clearly everybody's different, but there's a trend that I've been seeing quite a bit, and that is that, and I'm going to say mostly women, although many men fall into this category as well. When we are just busy, 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 we don't really give ourselves enough time to take breaks, to have fun, to have pleasure. And what happens is we become starved for these things. And we have found that food is a very readily available, easy thing to fill those voids in our life. So, for example, if you're at work, suddenly you find yourself craving something. Well, maybe you really need a nap, or maybe you really need to walk outside, or just a break. But that might not be an acceptable thing in your work environment. But it's always acceptable to say, hey, I think I'm hungry. I need a snack. So we take a snack instead of a break. Same thing in other areas. You know, I'm not having enough fun, so I think I'll bake cookies and eat them all. You know, that's a fun night
right in.
We're using food to just really substitute these things that we desperately need in our life.
Ah, okay. So the one thing that I think is really important to emphasize is that contrary to what's been said for decades, then, overeating isn't necessarily a matter of self-control or willpower, as my stepmother used to talk about all the time, but it occurs because our body-mind also perceives this stress as an attack, and our body is saying, danger, lay in extra resources so we can survive this attack, however long it takes, and then we feel pressured to comply. Is that an...
Well, I think there's a lot going on there. I think, first of all, to your point about it's not our fault, I think that it's not really our fault. I mean, you know, there's so many triggers, chemical triggers going on in our food, and food manufacturers are keenly aware of what ingredients are going to make us want to keep eating and not want to stop. And they're testing this stuff. Like, what is that exact point that's going to make somebody just go, oh, my God, this is so delicious, I have to eat the whole bag of chips, you know, or the whole box of cookies. So many of us, especially sugar, seems to be a huge trigger for people. And once we start, we can't stop. But for some people, it's the chips. Some people, it's the bread basket. And some people, it's the wine. And we really have to start understanding ourselves as eaters. And then we can give up the, oh, my God, I'm an awful person because I ate that, and rather say, oh, isn't this interesting that once I start eating this food, I can't stop. And use that information to help us change our habits rather than continuing to beat ourselves up for not having willpower.
One way I was looking at it is it's about cooperating with what messages are coming to us from our bodies. So we have a choice of not cooperating or changing our habits, as you're talking about. But in general, most people cooperate and they do things like what you call scale hovering or endlessly depriving themselves, dieting, and offering ourselves self-recrimination. And our sign-off slogan on this show, Lisa, is pay attention not to what you want to overcome, but to what you want to become.
I love that.
Yes, and I think your entire book is dedicated to showing us what we can do in order to become a person that isn't food obsessed.
Thank you, and I agree with you on that. I think that, you know, I grew up in that world of no pain, no gain, that you had to, you know, work so hard till it hurt, and you had to beat yourself up and suffer and deprive and be strict. And that was the only way that we were going to get the results that you wanted. And over the years, I think there's been a growing awareness around the fact that that doesn't really work. All that does is make us feel terrible about ourselves. And so to your point, to become that person who is not food obsessed, we have to start with a little self-compassion and understanding that we're pretty smart and that we just have to start listening to our bodies and respecting ourselves and looking at everything as clues. You know, this is not, food is not good or bad. Food is, cravings are clues to things that we need, some of which are food related, some of which are not. And even with foods, some foods we should eat more, some foods we should eat less, but we don't need to demonize it all. We need to just start befriending our body, listening to what works, and start nourishing ourselves with the best quality that we can. And that's the opposite of no pain, no gain. It's like, let's give ourselves the best food we can eat. Let's tell ourselves that we are awesome. And that's how we're going to move into a better place and a better relationship with food.
Well, that's really interesting. I certainly grew up in a family where criticism was seen as something that would motivate people to change. And as a psychotherapist for the last 44 years, I agree with you that that's absolutely not what makes us change. And I like your approach because what you're saying is, let's be kind to ourselves. Let's have the kindness of a parent to a young child and say, oh, you're doing this? Well, you know, are you sure you want to do that? I think you might feel better if you have this over here. And it's such a wonderful, different approach. So I'm grateful for that.
Thank you. I think we're so mean to ourselves. You know, we would never treat a friend the way as poorly as we treat ourselves. You know, the things we say to ourselves again
and again.
And it really just doesn't work. And to your point about criticism, I think that there's so many books and there's so many people out there telling us this is what you have to eat and this is how you have to exercise and this is what you have to do. And we're feeling like, I can't do that. I'm not good enough. What's wrong with me? like, I can't do that. And we're feeling like those young children, you know, being criticized again because we don't feel like we can live up to that. And I think that, first of all, we're all different. There is not one right way for every single person to eat or exercise. And that if we take the time and the love and compassion to start experimenting without shame, without judgment, and experiment what works with our body, what works with our minds, we can get to a good place. I know I did, and I know that my clients do, and that it is very doable, but it doesn't just happen. You have to work towards it. You have to want to work towards it.
Well, that reminds me of the Buddhist approach of being curious about something. In your book, you talk about having an investigative hat or an investigative mind to look at yourself. You know, what does make me, what foods do make me feel good? How much exercise do I like to do? What kind of exercise actually works for me? That sort of thing. So that instead of taking prescriptions one size fits all from other people, we actually discover within ourselves what it is that works for us.
Exactly. And we're smart, you know? We
right.
know what we want. I think that, like, often our intelligence is really being insulted out there. You know, like, oh, yes, you know better what's for me than I know. Well, maybe sometimes, but I don't know if that's always true. And so what I love to do is do experiments with people and say, okay, well, let's see. You know, I'm never going to say to someone, I know the right answer. But I will say, I know how to help you find out the answer. And together, we're going to go on a little journey. And we're going to test out how different foods make you feel. And what I found is that if someone says to you, don't eat that cupcake, it's going to make you fat, you're, well, big deal, right? But if someone said to you, don't eat that cupcake because it might make you feel really anxious and it might make you sad and depressed because your body might not handle the sugar all that well. Well, that's a different story. That's something somebody might wake up and say, oh, that's really interesting. I'm going to play around with that. We want to be happy. We want to feel good. And that's something that people can latch on to. Like, this is not about good or bad. This is about, well, how does that make me feel? And when we start wanting to feel good, we're naturally drawn to behaviors and foods that make us feel better. And things that make us feel worse, well, those we're going to shift. We're going to move out.
Mm-hmm. So I hear the trust. I like that approach. A few years ago, I decided when I go out for dinner, I read the menu and then I imagine, how will I feel after I eat this particular meal versus that particular meal? And that's the way I decided what I would order.
And I love that. I'm going to borrow that one.
Oh, good. Well, it made a huge difference. And every once in a while, I would go against, you know, what I thought would really be the best for me. And then I go, okay, so I really don't feel as good. Yes, I was right. This doesn't work. And then just do something different next time. I want to talk about how emotions are involved in more of this. If I'm understanding you, I'm just going to take you through a few steps here. First, we're stressed and we don't pay attention to our emotions. We push them into the background. And then when we do listen, we focus on the negative, the problem, on what's wrong with us, which means to me that we go into our brain instead of into our emotions and start with the negative. And third, with all of this going on, a person has no room to really listen to what our body mind really wants. And most of us have learned to apply food first, as you were talking about earlier, so that we cover up our real desires. What's your response to that summary?
I think it's really complicated. I think that we are living in stress mode 24/7. And when I say stress mode, it's, you know, fight or flight, that feeling being chased by a tiger. And our bodies don't know the difference between literally the actual tiger, or being stuck in traffic, or, you know, rushing out the door, you know, to get to work on time, or, you know, shuttling kids, whatever it is, our body knows we're in danger. And when we're in danger, our processes in our bodies, they work differently. Anything that is not essential, which typically is digestion and immunity, shuts down temporarily so that we can focus on fleeing danger. So for all these people that are living in this danger state, things are not working all that well. Digestively, they're getting sick, the stress is making them, you know, messed up in a million ways. Now, in an ideal world, like if we were chased by that tiger, eventually we would hopefully find safety and everything would resume and we would relax and our body would start working normally. But so many people that I see, they don't ever stop. They don't ever bring it down. And so they don't even know what's going on in their body. They've got hormones, they've got adrenaline, they've got everything going on and flying around. They don't even know what they even want or need. And so slowing down, even for a minute, to take a few deep breaths, your body starts knowing it's not in danger, that it can work properly, that it could actually not be holding on to everything for dear life. You know, like when you're in stress, your body thinks you might be going into famine. So it's not going to let you release fat or like anything like that, because that could be dangerous. But when you relax, your body says, okay, I'm all right. I'm going to let things flow. So the most important thing is to take that breath and listen and start making connections. You know, am I actually even hungry? Am I hungry for this? Am I hungry for something else? But let's give the body a break. And that's so important.
No, that's a very impassioned plea.
Yeah.
And I really like that. I just wanted to say that my experience is that whatever we pay attention to, we feed energy to, and it tends to grow. And there have been eating issues in my family, and so I've worked with this a lot, and I realized that if I paid attention to what was wrong with me, or what's the problem that I ate that bag of Oreo cream sandwiches or something, then I actually am feeding more energy to the problem than I am to the solution. And that's really important. And I like what you're talking about here, because you're offering the solution is not only has to do with eating, but has to do with slowing down and being in the world and being alive and not just racing through life numb.
Being mindful, I think it's a huge part of it. And to what you said before, I think that we are just so driven to move away from things we don't like, distraction and discomfort. We don't want to deal with it, so we'll move to other things so we don't have to think about them. But when we lean into it and when we start getting curious and we ask those questions, then we actually make progress and we get answers instead of just repeating the same behavior again and again and again. And so I do agree with you wholeheartedly. And it isn't just about the food. It is about the lifestyle. It is about being aware that we are living, breathing animals in this world that need to be nourished on many levels, and food is just one form of nourishment. You know, we need healthy relationships. We need to move our bodies. We need to be learning new things. We need purpose. And when we can nourish ourselves in so many ways, food suddenly has one part of it, but not everything.
That's really sage advice. We're up to our first break. Lisa, my guest today is Lisa Lutan. She's a healthy living strategist and founder of Healthy, Happy, and Hip, as well as the author of Busy, Stressed, and Food Obsessed. So we'll talk more about defeating any food obsession you may have in your life when we come back here on Full Power Living.
How difficult is it for you to ask directly for what you really want? To take responsibility graciously and willingly for your mistakes? Or to relate with others because it's fun instead of because you need something from them? Most people believe manipulation and codependence are normal behaviors for adults. They may be common, but they're not normal. Manipulative behaviors really are designed to be part of childhood, to be put away as things of the past when we become adults. So if you're ready to let manipulation and codependence be part of your past, then get the mini course I've created for you, Ending Codependence, The Bottom Line. I'm Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, offering you a formula that you can follow for creating healthy, manipulation-free, and lasting intimate relationships. I also give you the tools and principles that you can use to develop lasting immunity to codependence. Get Ending Codependence today at www.emotionalpro.com. That's emotionalpro.com.
Welcome back to Full Power Living. I have a few announcements. First, I'd like you to visit emotionalpro.com for two things. One, as you've just heard, you can get your mini course on codependence, which I think is really, really powerful and important information for all of us. But you can also download a copy of my free list of the signals of seven everyday emotions, and that can help you move your life toward mastery over the emotions that come up in your life. While you're there, please sign up to be on our mailing list. We'd like to send you our biweekly newsletter telling you about our programs. For example, next week we have Chaney Weiner, who is Human Potential and Personal Development Authority, and he's going to be discussing how to live a meaningful life while feeling respected, appreciated, and recognized for who you are and all you do. Be here at 9 a.m. Pacific time, which is noon Eastern time, next Thursday for my discussion with Chaney Weiner. And thank you, too, for helping us with our mission of transforming our world through understanding the importance, mastery, and power of human emotions. Whether we're talking physical health, relationships, or money, our emotions are part of everything. And here on Full Power Living, we talk about it all so that you can become masterful in working with emotions as they arise in your life. Today, I'm talking with Lisa Lutan, who's a healthy living strategist, founder of Healthy, Happy, and Hip, and the author of Busy, Stressed, and Food Obsessed. So, Lisa, I think you have been drawn to understanding our relationship with food and stress in our lives through our own journey. So I wanted to take the time to have you share something with all of us about your personal learning, your own crash and burn, and how that led you to offer what you're offering to the world now.
Yes, well, I was a sugar junkie. Well, not even just sugar, a junk food junkie as a kid. But I was smart in school and a skinny girl, so nobody really cared what I ate or paid attention. And I kept going like that for a while. I found that I had this really amazing talent that I was working on, and that was being busy. And I was able to handle quite a lot of things at once. And so right after I graduated college in my early 20s, I co-founded a technology company with my boyfriend, who's now my husband. And these were the days before it was cool to have a tech startup. You know, we didn't have venture firms throwing money at us. We were a bootstrap company, and we were working like crazy, you know, 80-hour weeks after week after week, and living on the not healthiest diet, like many people in their 20s. You know, we were basically eating crappy food for breakfast, for lunch, and for dinner, never ate a meal at home. And we went on like this for years, and then I had a baby, and I was so depleted, I literally couldn't even make breast milk. I was so wiped out, but it never occurred to me or anyone else. You know, nobody ever thought maybe that my lifestyle had something to do with this. And so
wow.
I just kept going. No, never a doctor. Nobody ever, you know, picked up on any of this. Kept going, you know, literally running on empty, was a mess. Had another baby, moved into a house, and then collapsed. And my collapse looked like, it felt like I was having a stroke. I was getting ready to go to a wedding, and I was zipping up my gown. I had the updo. I had the red lipstick, the heels, the whole bit. And all of a sudden, I started getting blurry vision. I had tingles in my hands. I had numbing up my arm. I started screaming. I thought, am I having a stroke? I was 31 years old. I had two babies. I had a
wow.
business. It was terrifying. And I was rushed to the hospital where I spent hours missing the wedding, of course, where my daughter was the flower girl. My husband was the best man, you know, freaking that I was ruining everybody's lives because I had always been this cool, competent, together person. My life was literally exploding in front of my eyes. And after hours, the resident basically said to me, oh, no, this is not a stroke. This, and none of these symptoms that you're saying make sense. It's probably just stress. And he broke me. I was like, oh, my God. Like, my world fell apart. And they're telling me that this isn't something real, you
wow.
know. And it threw me into the deepest, darkest hole that I had ever been in of depression because I kept having repeat symptoms again and again. I kept going back to doctors, and doctors kept giving me prescriptions, and I kept not taking them because nobody could tell me what was wrong with me.
Oh, wow.
And it was terrifying. I was depressed. I was still working. My husband was working 80 hours a week. I had babies. I was lonely. I had no support, and it was literally the worst time in my life. And so after 2 years of not finding any answers, I said, I'm an entrepreneurial girl. Like, I have to find a way to figure this out. And so
yeah.
I took matters into my own hands, and I started researching. Now, these were the days before Google, so it was very hard to research. Now I'd type in my symptoms, and I'd have an answer in a minute. But I had to go and read books, and I had to interview family members. And I started looking at the prescriptions and saying, what did they even think I had? And slowly, I started putting together answers to my questions and connecting my dots. And what I realized in my case was I had, you know, obviously severe exhaustion. I had crippling anxiety that I never knew I had because I always kept it in. I was always so cool on the outside, but I was, like, internalizing it. And I had a predisposition to migraines, which I never knew I had because I never had a headache. But in this case, it was ocular migraine. And so this triple kind of combination all at once felt like it had been a stroke. So once I figured all this out, I was so excited, but I still didn't feel good. So I thought, how am I going to get better? And this was 20 years ago. There weren't all these wonderful nutritionists and wonderful studies out. You know, they weren't there. And so
yes.
I said, I have to just start listening to my body because I think up until that point, I don't even think I knew I had a body. I think I lived in my head. You know, my thoughts were, I was like always thinking and working. And I was like, what's that thing attached to me? So I started like listening to my body, and I started just noticing, well, how do foods make me feel, and exercise and caffeine and stress and meditation and thoughts and positive thinking. And I literally became my own human experiment for like 20 years. And at first, it was a matter of getting well, which I did. And then I was like, wow, if I got well, what would it take to feel awesome, you know? And I just kind of kept going with this. And, like, now I'm in my early 50s. I've never felt better. And so when I went back to school, you know, a number of years ago, it was just like this instant thing where I understood what people were going through. I understood the pressure and the stress and the, you know, just this disconnect of our mind and our body. And so I was able to help people in a way that was very profound, because I think that, you know, until you walk in someone's shoes, you don't really understand their experience. And I walked in those shoes, and I'm the, this is what will happen to you if you don't take care of yourself story.
Wow.
You know, the warning story. But the good news is, I know how to make people healthy. And I know how to, you know, change that and avoid that. And that's been my biggest blessing to myself and my biggest gift, that what I can help others do.
Wow, that's really quite a story. And how wonderful to bring yourself back from that. I was talking with somebody earlier this week. I'm 73 years old. And as I mentioned right before the show, my husband died about 4 months ago. And I'm looking at, what am I going to do with the rest of my life? And a number of psychics that I know have suggested that I'm going to live at least another 30 years. I'm in good health at this point, and so I'm looking to take off on some adventures, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I've been asking myself, how does a person go into the ending years of their life when they're over 70, and stay healthy and stay involved and have it be a good life for another 30 years? And the answer that I've gotten is that I need to keep moving forward, taking care of myself nutritionally, as we're talking about today, but I also need to keep living my life the way I've lived it in the past, which means to me, when there's a change possible, go ahead and investigate it. When there's adventure, go ahead and go on it, et cetera, et cetera. Don't sit there and say, well, I can't because I'm this age, or because that might happen, or something like that. You have to step into life, and that's a lot of what I hear you talking about, too.
I love your attitude. Oh my goodness. I'm in my early 50s, and there are so many women my age that aren't even living life like that. So kudos to you. I think you hit on so many important points, you know, that good health is not just about food and exercise. You know, good health is like this passion for living and learning new things and seizing opportunities and not curling up in a ball and just saying, I'm too old to do this. You know, these are our own self-limiting beliefs. And I talk quite a bit in the book about challenging those beliefs and understanding, you know, is that even true? You know, just because I think it, is that true? And the only way you're going to find out is if you start asking yourself those questions. And I think that that's so wonderful. I'll share with you something really interesting. I learned a new word recently that I've been thinking about a lot, and it's a Japanese word. And forgive me if I do pronounce this incorrectly, but it's called ikigai. And the word means the reason you wake up in the morning. And I think it's a really wonderful question for all of us to ask ourselves, what is it that makes us want to wake up in the morning? You know, what is it that we're passionate about, whether it's our work or our families or the world? And if we don't have that in our life, how can we figure out what that is or work towards what we want it to be? Because that, when we have true, vibrant passion in life, you know, we're not going to start filling that void with food or alcohol or other things that are just masking what the real issue is. And I think that many of us are just hungry for life.
Mm-hmm. Boy, I like that term. That's a really interesting concept, because so many people, I think, wake up in the morning to what I would call their have-tos. And part of the change that I've attempted to make over the last maybe 20 years is to take those have-tos and move them into being want twos or even get twos.
That's awesome. And move the shoulds into the coulds, you know, like just really say that you do have a choice in all this, you know, and that we are the only ones that are going to turn our lives into what we want them to be. And if we, again, it all comes to taking that pause and to listen and listen inside, you know, what is it that I'm really yearning for? What are those get-tos? And are they faraway get-tos or are they right now, today, get-tos? Because if we don't make things priorities in our life, they're never going to happen.
Amen.
Right.
So you've developed a 5-step process to break out of the negative cycle. We've been talking about some of it, but I wanted to just have you go through it with me. First of all, you say that hunger is a symptom, not a cause. And you've already mentioned that hunger may be drawing our attention to many other things that we actually want. It's sort of like a cover crop, if you will, and we can look underneath and see what else is there. Is that an accurate way?
I think that the first thing we have to ask ourselves is, am I really hungry? And many of us have forgotten what it feels like to be hungry because, you know, we have food so readily available all the time, and we are programmed to want to eat when we see food. It goes back to, you know, the caveman era when we didn't know when food was going to be available. So our bodies, naturally, when we see food, it literally starts, you know, the digestive enzymes start working, and we ready ourselves to eat it because we don't know when it's going to next be available. But in a world where food is available all over the place, this doesn't serve us very well. You know, we think we're hungry all the time. So we have to sometimes say, well, when did I last eat and what did I eat and did it have the right, you know, nutrients in it to keep me full? And if those things are all checked off, well, then maybe I'm hungry for something else. Maybe I am hungry for the nap. Maybe I'm hungry for personal connection. Maybe I'm hungry for excitement. And so understanding what you're really hungry for is really, really important. And so that's step number one.
All right. Then we also talked about how will this food make me feel physically. These are some of the questions that you ask under, you've mentioned pause a number of times. You have different words. What particular thing, that's the P, am I really hungry for? Awareness, how will this food make me feel physically? And this one I like, the U in pause, it has to do with urges. Can I stop after only one bite if my urges kick in? What's that about?
That's all about chemical triggers. And that's like, again, understanding yourself as an eater. You know, like some people can go and have the one square of dark chocolate and be really happy. You know, I know myself. I'm going to keep going back until I eat most of the bar. And so that's my urge. Whereas, you know, some people it's the bread basket. Again, some people it's the wine. And it's not good or bad. It's just this is who I am. And so when we understand it, we have that opportunity during the pause to say, you know, what's going to happen if I take that first bite? Am I going to keep going? And then am I going to beat myself up? And then am I going to feel like crap? You know, and in that moment, I can decide, like, no, I don't want to go there. Or, yes, I do. It's my choice, but I have a choice. And unless I take a pause, I don't even realize I have a choice.
Wow. I remember when I was working on food issues. We have, in my family, we've had bulimia. I did more binge eating, like sitting down and eating an entire large container of Oreo cream sandwiches as I was nursing my baby and not wanting to quit. And one of the things that I came up with is that it was like an addiction. And I learned that addictions are often a war between good and evil. I overate, I'm evil. I didn't eat those cookies, I'm good, you know?
Yeah.
And that, I think you deal with that by talking about start over and about, you know, if you get off track, just get back on track again. Don't make yourself good or evil. Just get back on track. I think that's really brilliant recommendation.
Well, I think that we're human, and I don't think we're perfect. And I certainly don't eat perfectly all the time. I wouldn't expect you or anybody else to either, you know. And so we do the best we can. Now, I think, you know, the issue of addiction, and I'm very careful with the word addiction because, you know, if someone is dealing with a serious drug addiction, they might find it offensive to talk about sugar that way. But the findings are showing that sugar operates, you know, is addictive like cocaine in our bodies. And so mm-hmm. I don't believe it is a willpower thing. I really do believe that many of us, not everyone, but I would say even most of us, sugar goes in our body. We can't help it. If there are those ice cream sandwiches there, we're going to keep going until we get sick or they're gone or, you know, it's just something that's going on in our body so much bigger than what we are. Now, A, don't beat yourself up because it isn't your fault. But B, you have to be really strategic about it. You know, saying, oh my God, I stink and I'm never going to do this again. Well, that's not going to work because it's in our system. So you have to really come up with a plan of getting it out of your system. Because when you get it out of your system, then you can resist it. While it's in your system, it is so difficult to say no. And that's why I developed the programs that I developed, because I realized that people were really struggling, and I developed these 10-day programs for people to get the sugar out or get the alcohol out or experiment with food. In fact, I have an alcohol one coming up June 1st, if anyone is interested. But literally, it's not your fault. These are very, very addictive foods and drinks, and you really do need to take a break away from them. And then you can say, it's not that I can't have it, I just don't want it. And that's a huge shift.
Yes. So while we're on the topic, and I know we need to take a break here too, but do people can find at healthyhappyandhip.com, they can find the registration for these programs, correct?
Yes, and they can also email me directly, lisa@healthyhappyandhip.com, for more information.
Okay,
Lose
good.
The Booze is the new one. It's starting June 1st. And, you know, again, it's not for alcoholics. This is for many people who are social drinkers, but they just know they're drinking too much, and they need to take a break and feel better. And that's what my whole thing is, let's feel good. Let's just do an experiment and see how we feel.
I love experiments. I use that technique in therapy. You know, just try it for 3 days. See what happens.
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
It's really great. All right, we're up to our second break. My guest is Lisa Lutan, who's author of Busy Stressed and Food Obsessed. You're listening to Full Power Living, and we'll be right back.
Parent, have you found all the parenting information you've been hearing lately a bit confusing? Are you having trouble sorting out the best response to your defiant child, or feeling hopeless about regaining respect from your teen, or determining whether your actions as a parent are the right ones? Instead of the usual pressures of parenting that you've been experiencing, you can partner with your child, raising incredible kids who are destined to become amazing adults. I'm Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, giving you the opportunity to become the incredible parent for incredible kids. We have the method and the tools. You bring your optimism for learning and the kids. Raise Incredible Kids offers a comprehensive system for raising kids who are responsible, make their own great decisions, and become immune to peer pressure. To get you ready for this new era in parenting, get my free 10-page report, Incredible Communication That Helps You Create Incredible Kids, by visiting RaiseIncredibleKids.com now. That's RaiseIncredibleKids.com.
I I'm talking today with Lisa Lutan, who's a healthy living strategist and founder of Healthy, Happy, and Hip. You can find her at healthyhappyandhip.com, and she's also the author of Busy, Stressed, and Food Obsessed. And Lisa, part of your approach is promoting mindfulness, and I think most of our listeners who are familiar with mindfulness, but many people may still not understand quite what it is. And I'd like you to talk about mindfulness as you understand it, and most especially in terms of mindful eating.
Great. So I like to think about mindfulness as literally being where I am, where I am. So many times our heads are off in the future, thinking about all the planning we have to do, or, you know, the worries of what might happen, or we're in the past thinking about memories, instead of being right here in the now. And so when we take this whole concept of mindfulness and apply it to eating, what does that mean? Well, I like to look at it on so many levels. Number one, I like to literally look at my food and smell it and taste it and appreciate it. Now, many people are grabbing a bar, you know, or picking up a donut in the car. They're munching away, and they go, oh, my God, where did it go? You know, they didn't even notice it, or they were eating in front of the TV or the computer or while they were doing something else. So they never even felt that they got to taste it. So step one is really be with your food. Look at it, smell it, taste it. Is it creamy? Is it crunchy? How did it get there? You know, where did it come from? You know, I like to be very, take a moment and really be grateful that I have this opportunity to eat this food. And then moving on a little bit more, you know, how does this food make me feel? I love what you said earlier, that you would imagine in the restaurant how you would feel afterwards. Well, and that's awesome. So let's build that into that. Like, you know, is this something positive and wonderful that I'm bringing in my body? Or am I literally taking out something while I'm eating this? You know, am I going to be causing inflammation and disease? Or am I bringing in healthy energy and love and good nutrient? And so when I'm mindful of what I'm eating, I can be thinking about that. And am I doing something good for myself? And then I like to take it out another ring and I say, well, where am I? And who am I with? And actually be grateful and aware of the people that I am with. Because what's the point of sharing a meal with someone if I'm looking at my phone and they're looking at their phone and we're not even connecting, right?
Right.
So being mindful and really listening to them and really connecting, and that's so nourishing. That piece adds to my satisfaction in my meal, of really being present in every way. And when you finish a meal like that, you feel full. When you eat something on the go, on the fly, you're like, what can I eat next? You know, like, oh, I didn't even taste that. I need to eat more, 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 right? So much of that goes into satisfying us.
That's really interesting. You know, I had mentioned that my husband died in January, and I was really tired because he was sick for over 4 years. He died of cancer. It was 2 or 3 weeks of very intense, you know, lots of family around, planning a memorial service, helping him to die because he died at home with hospice. And I was so tired. I was tempted not to eat well. And then I thought, that's ridiculous. You know, just because I'm tired, I actually need better food than I would need otherwise. And so I just began making very simple meals, but making sure good for me. And now, perhaps when my husband was sick, I couldn't get out to the garden, which is a bit of a way from the house. So I found these planter boxes that go over the railing of our back deck. And I actually have a vegetable garden growing on the railing of my back deck. And I'm so excited about my own strawberries and my own lettuce and my own green beans that it tempts me to eat much better.
I love that. You know, you are just so on it, you know, and I think so many good points there. You know, number one, when you think about this fresh, wonderful food that you're growing yourself, like what's more exciting than like picking off a strawberry, you know, that's
right.
growing outside your kitchen. And then compare that to like something sitting on a supermarket shelf filled with preservatives so that it can last up to 2 years. You know, when you look at food like that, think about what you're putting in your body, the energy and that love and that wonderfulness from that strawberry or those chemicals of that box that's been sitting there on the shelf. You know, and so, again, we go back to that choice. What do you want to put in your body? You know, I want that strawberry.
Right.
But going back to your point of, you know, caring for your husband and the grief and so many of us in our lives are dealing with really hard times, you know, whether we're taking care of other people, whether we're losing people. I've lost both my parents in the last year, and I know how these times, they just throw us out of our groove. And
yes.
So, again, like you had the composure to even recognize that even in your total and utter despair that you needed to take care of yourself was a really beautiful thing. Because I think many people, beautiful, beautiful, many people go, I'll deal with it later. I'm just going to do this now and I'll deal with it later. And they do that in stressful times, they do that in sad times, it's always later. But if we can take that approach, well, I'm going to do the best I can right now because I do want to feel better and I do want to come out of this on the other side feeling okay, that taking those little steps is so important and so helpful because it helps us deal with the stress and the grief rather than making it worse.
Right. And I'm aware as you are saying that, I'll just add this in, that it in many ways has been a gift to my husband because I know that my husband wanted me to go forward and have a good life. So it's almost like an homage. I'll take care of myself so that I can do that.
Yeah, and what a great role model you are for so many women out there. No, I mean that because it's a really hard thing. And yet, you're a perfect, wonderful example of someone who is taking care of yourself. You are doing really interesting things, you know, with your work. You're traveling. You were telling me how you're going to go visit your daughter. And like, that's amazing. That's a wonderful role model for all of us women out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, take care of ourselves. And then we can go and live and be a better mom and be a better wife and be better to the whole world by starting with taking care of ourselves.
Absolutely. I lived for 20 years as a single parent, and I had always been taught that when you have children, you just have to sacrifice your life for them. And being a single parent will disabuse you of that very quickly because I discovered that when I got sick or I got depressed and I wasn't doing well, everything fell apart. Everything.
Right.
And so taking care of myself actually was the most important thing I could do. And that was a real call for me. Well, I've totally enjoyed talking with you today. Lisa, I'm sure it's been relieving for lots of people to realize that issues with food obsession aren't there because there's anything wrong with us, but largely because when we get busy and stressed, that triggers are set off that cause our body to crave food. And I think your book, Busy, Stressed, and Food Obsessed, is very common sense, very supportive, has wonderful suggestions about working with this issue in ourselves. And above all, I love your approach about being kinder and more understanding with ourselves. So thank you so much.
Oh, thank you for having me. And if anyone has questions, they really can reach out to me, Lisa at healthyhappyandhip.com. And I do write quite a bit, and I share my thoughts on these things. And the book is on Amazon if anybody you know, would like to get a copy. It's coming out in audio version, hopefully within the next couple of weeks. Yeah, I'm very excited about that.
Yes.
And, yeah, and it's a real pleasure. And I know what a struggle this is, so I'm here to help if I can.
Oh, that's really great. And I know my friend was telling me about her daughter having an accountability buddy.
Mm.
And, you know, it made me think about how important it is for many, many people to have support. And that's a wonderful, generous offer on your part. Thank you so much for being with us on Full Power Living here today, Lisa. It's been a pleasure.
Oh, thank you.
All right. So join us live every Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern time, for more powerful experiences on Full Power Living, including next Thursday when I talk about when I talk with Chaney Weiner about having how you can have a meaningful life and be treated well at the same time. And I encourage you to invite your friends and family. Paul Johnston of Fresh Talk Media is our producer. Thank you, Paul. Thanks for getting us back up and running today. And for now, I'm Eileen Dillon, your host, reminding you to pay attention not to what you want to overcome, but to what you want to become.
To Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.